Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to the podcast this week. I couldn't be more excited and delighted to have this conversation with my new friend, Laura Day, who I think is going to make you feel like the mind blown emoji, but then like a heart right after that. So Laura is a New York Times bestselling author. She has spent over four decades, I think her entire life, using intuition to help herself and to help others and to help billion-dollar companies achieve their goals. She is amazing. I'm so blessed to have found out about her work, to have her here. And I think this conversation, dear listener, whether you are looking for love or in love, I think you're going to love it. So fasten your seatbelt, because Laura, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
What a generous intro. Thank you so much.
Well, let's jump right in. Why don't you tell us about you, your story, and then we'll get to the prism. How does that sound?
Sounds great. So I am a mother of a 33-year-old, and I'm on my second marriage to the love of my life, who I met when I was 52. That's 14 years ago.
Did you guys hear that? Say it again for the people in the back. She was 52 when she met the love of her life. So it is never too late to find love.
And I am a practicing intuitive, which is a nice word for a psychic. People always ask me, when did you know you had this gift? And I reply that I didn't. I figured, like most people in their early 20s, that everyone saw the world exactly the way I did. And it wasn't until I saw a TV show. I'm a math and science nerd. I went to a school called Stuyvesant in New York that's all math and science nerds.
That is amazing.
And I saw a TV show on the extended capacities of human perception, extrasensory perception. And I thought, wait, doesn't everybody do this? Like I was really surprised that everyone wasn't aware that they communicated with the world around them in this way, and that often it was as unhelpful as it was helpful. So I called up this group of doctors who were doing this research, and there were many groups out there at the time. This is the early 80s, and I said, I can do what you're talking about. And I ended up kind of passed around to various programs as a, mouse that ran the mazes. I did it on the condition of anonymity, because coming from a, super dysfunctional family, the last thing I wanted to be was weird. They televised one of the experiments, probably for fundraising purposes. So they broke my trust. And I had an instant following. And I didn't really know what to do with it, because I did not want to cross the crazy line. By that time, my mother had suicided. Later, my brother and sister both suicided. And I really didn't want to cross over into the esoteric and the past lives. And not that all of that isn't something that I perceived, but it was not where I wanted to go. So I ended up only working with politics, which I soon stopped, business, medicine, research. I worked on one of the first research programs for HIV with, I did a tiny part with a very, very prominent researcher, Dr. Larry Waitz of blessed memory. And I really stuck to things that could be proven or disproven, not because I think that the rest of it isn't valid or interesting, but it just wasn't something I was comfortable with. My day job is I predict the future and do kind of intuitive corporate spying for four multi-billion dollar companies. And what gives me real purpose, although I love my work, it's basically taking a neurological defect and making it into a plus, which I think we all kind of have to do.
You're
But
so awesome.
what I love is making everybody in the world as weird as I am, H having them aware that this is functioning in their lives all the time, and then training it and directing it to create better lives. And as intuitive as I am, and I am extraordinarily intuitive, I'm functionally disabled in other areas, but I am an extraordinary intuitive. I really realize that even with me, it had to be trained, because that same intuition that allows me to see the future with great accuracy or know what's going on inside someone's body at a distance also allows people's demands, people's pathology, people's wishes to be experienced by myself as my own. So it wasn't very helpful in many ways, in building a life. The Prism is my seventh book, and the Prism is actually what saved my life, not intuition, but intuition's ability to allow a download that you're too young to understand and have it drive your car for you until you are a trustworthy driver.
I read your book. It's amazing. And everyone listening should get the book and read the book. And in the book, you said this, the prism saved my life, and that you want to be the angel for people. And that just gave me chills when I read that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love you already. Can you tell us a little bit about your story and your background? You mentioned some dysfunction and how you grew up. And I think that that'll set the stage for people to really better understand you and the miracle that you are.
One reason I put memoir in this book, and it's interesting because I have such bad ADD that I forget. So I forget consistently that I put my story in this book.
You did.
And one of the reasons I did was that I think that I experience from the tens of thousands of people who email me or show up in workshops that people feel that they're too defective, or they're too,
Broken.
unworthy or broken
Broken.
to receive what it is they want. And I really wanted to start by saying to people, because I think a lot of self-help is I've found the answer and I'm evolved. I'm not evolved. I wanted to say I've been, and I'll give a little history, but I have been raped, I've been beaten, I've been left without food. My parents really didn't consider their four children, which is why two of them are dead by their own hand. I've had to do things that survivors have to do. I've been people that I'm not proud of to survive. There is so much that I had to be and do and endure to get to this point, and all of it has turned into an advantage. That's not to say that when difficulty happens, it always has a bright side. No, often it kills you, or often it really does hobble you, which is why I wrote The Prism. I was at 5 years old, My parents lived in one apartment, and we, meaning me and three younger children, lived in an apartment next door,
Unbelievable.
not unconnected. You had to go out into a hallway and pound on the door because, of course, you weren't tall enough to reach the doorbell.
At the age of 5, and your mom had your siblings in pretty rapid succession.
Yes, there were
So,
four children in 4.5 years. So I was there with a 6-month-old as the youngest, and I was the eldest. And most of the time, especially at night, we were alone. And there were periods that things functioned, and a lot of periods where they didn't. And in many cultures, a 5-year-old does know how to feed or change a younger child because there's an example. But I was raised by a suicidal manic depressive who I adored, my mother, and a violent, very funny, very smart, warm, but violent and inconsistent narcissist who was also, when I was that age, a young physician, so really not home very much. We had help sometimes, but most of the time not at night. People remember to feed us sometimes. It was really a very chaotic upbringing. And of course, when no one is protecting you, every predator comes out of the woodwork. And so, one of the things that the prism is about is that you don't have an I. You're not individuated. You're not separate from your environment at all. You don't have that
no.
capacity until around age 7. I was lucky. The same thing that made me unable to memorize the periodic tables, very severe executive function problems, ADHD, also allowed other things to come through me, not become part of me. People confuse intuition with wisdom, and it's not. Intuition comes through you. So when I had younger children, because there was a demand that was way above my pay grade, this ability to do things came through me, almost took me over, as if I had a prosthetic exoskeleton or someone else driving my car. And helped me when in me to warm a bottle or change a diaper or deal with a threat or comfort someone younger or even comfort myself. Although, unfortunately, I did comfort in myself mostly by dissociating, by going out of myself. And I really didn't, as there was less demand, so as people, as my siblings got older, and of course, again, dysfunctional families have very dysfunctional households. It's very rare that siblings band together, and that's not really what happened with us. We were really kind of set against each other. There were such limited resources and really almost no supervision, but very high expectations. I grew up in private schools that I never had the uniform for, and people who didn't quite understand why these ragamuffin children were, my father was a white glove doctor, and my mother was, very well brought up, although my sense is she was probably abused also as a child. And so I wrote 6 books about intuition, because intuition, the same trauma and the same kind of organic structure that allows my brain to do these incredible things, really also opened a window for the fact that we all can use our intuition to get the information we need, and that we all need to have boundaries to our intuition to not be taken over by opportunistic situations and people. After my brother and sister committed suicide about a decade ago in quick succession, one after the other,
Wow.
in 2 years. And there seems to be a witching age in my family. My mother committed suicide at 43. They made it to their very early 50s. Which is interesting because that's when my life really came together. I mean, by that time, I had a successful career. I had a wonderful son. The one thing that I really had not been able to create was a good partnership, a good love relationship, even though I knew I'd had them, but they resembled my parental relationships with me in the same role. And I'll tell later the very funny story about how I met my husband,
I
but I
can't
realized
wait.
intuition was one place that my programming was going to override. So I asked myself, I don't understand why are these two brilliant, educated? I mean, my brother graduated from Harvard. He had a master's from Stanford in control theory, another master's from the University of Virginia in business. My sister had a law degree from Columbia Law School and passed the bar on her first try, and was stunningly beautiful and shockingly smart. And I thought, I don't understand, why did I survive? And the prism, and it happened between the suicides, interestingly enough. The prism came as my answer. You had this. You didn't have the understanding to know you had this, but you had this. And when you needed it, you could touch this and it would work for you. It wasn't, again, an understanding. It was an operating manual for the vehicle of being a human being in a world. And it re I divide my books into two kinds, ones that are based on experience. So all my intuition books are based on being tested, being told you're special, knowing that no, I was not special, everyone could do it, translating the tests into something that would train people to do it, and creating workshops that are in these books. But there are two books that I really have channeled, meaning they've just come through me.
Through you, like you were
It
supposed to write them.
wasn't that I was supposed to write them. It was they came through me to help me. They weren't part of me. I didn't know about it. I still do this book all the time, and the other one, which is called The Circle. The circle is really how do you make your intuition go on automatic pilot? So you're not getting data all the time, but you're making the right moves and you're dealing with the things that get in the way of just being successful, being happy, getting things done without having to know all those things that we don't know.
And that's the circle you said.
That's the circle. That was
Okay.
fourth book, although it was the first book I ever, it was the first system I ever used, which I used to write my first book, which was a New York Times bestseller, and saved my life in so many ways. The prism is really taking down how that owner's manual works. So how it's not like most self-help or even like most intuition, in the sense that it's not look inside yourself, change yourself, because you know what? You can't think or act outside the box. You are the box.
You are the
So,
box.
90% of it is subconscious. You think you're doing something different, but you get the same results. So you weren't really doing anything
You're
different.
like in a program.
You're in a program and you don't see the program. So you need a catalyst. And that's why I write self-help. It is a catalyst. The difference is it's not about changing you. It's about doing something different. Tiny, tiny something. And I use the example in an Oprah article about wearing a red dress. In my generation, redheads weren't supposed to wear red. And in a bad moment in my life, the dresser gave me a red dress. I really was the least of my problems. I wore a red dress. It changed my life.
Oh my God.
People responded to me differently. I responded differently to what was coming toward me. Just the fact that I wasn't so controlling that I actually wore something I broke a rigid rule that I had stuck to for, I don't know, at that point, 50 years. It completely changed my life. So the prism really doesn't say, understand yourself, look for another 30 years at your belly button, at your navel. It says, oh, you want love? Go to the fourth ego center. That's what rules love, your heart. They correspond to the chakras, but they're not the chakras. Go
Right.
to the fourth ego center and pick one assertion that feels ridiculous to you. Because if it resonates with you, it makes you create something you've created before. I love when people say, this resonates with me. I said, that's useless to you. You need a catalyst. So you have to pick the thing you really don't believe. Like, when I'm not loved, I'm not in the right place. Now, cognitively that makes sense, but how many of us keep showing up with people at parties, at dinners, at family events, at jobs where we're not loved? We're not in the right place. And the fourth ego center isn't, the heart is not about love. Our first experience of love is being valued. We learn how to love by being born and being valued, not because we're cute or quiet or good, because we are.
We exist.
Because we exist. From that, very quickly, you learn to be of worth. And you see a tiny baby like saying, oh, wow, when I do this, it makes mommy smile. Or helping to hand something that you think somebody else wants. You see that before even a year old. And from that comes dignity. And what dignity is being your worth and having the world respond to you that way. So when people say, I'm looking for love, that already denies your worth. That's already a vote of no confidence. You're doing the work, because it starts with looking for where you're valued.
It's so funny. Typically our clients at Smart Dating Academy are kind of in their 30s through their late 70s. But recently I had a mom talk to me about her daughter who is 22 years old and goes from, and this is a girl that was raised by loving, lovely parents. And she says, my daughter says, I have to be in a relationship at all times, or I just, and she goes from relationship to relationship to relationship since high school. Can you talk about what might be going on there?
Well, I mean, it's so individual, but if
Yeah.
that is the case, then absolutely there was something that happened or didn't happen in the first 7 years of development when the ego developed that didn't allow this person to feel of value simply as a
As a
unique.
human.
And often, by the way, that's not because the parents didn't give enough. Sometimes
Correct.
it's because they gave too much, because you start by being given everything. A newborn can't, and an embryo, a zygote, a newborn can't provide for themselves. You need to be born into it. But the next phase is the maturation phase, where the beginnings of autonomy start. So often a child is so overvalued, and the caretakers don't allow them that struggle to find their worth in situations. And so they are incomplete. I mean, I would say my downside as a parent was not encouraging enough autonomy, because I had been given so little that I
Right.
overgave. Luckily, I have a very independent son who, got to a certain age and said, I don't want it.
Like, I'm good, Mom. Like,
I'm gonna do it myself.
I bet you just wanted to wrap him in pink sparkly bubble wrap and just say, I just don't want you to get dinged up in the way that I did.
I absolutely did. And one of the hard lessons, I think, as a parent is that, children have their own struggles and they are entitled to them. And it's very hard, because You see the difficulty, you see where you could make it better, you see where they're going to have to learn something the hard way, and yet it is, unless asked, it's not your business, and it's very hard.
You're right. That's incredibly hard to
And
do to
sometimes
just
they
witness.
surprise you. Sometimes, especially if you've given them a solid foundation at all those areas that create a life, sometimes they surprise you. And actually, yeah, they did it the hard way, but their result was better than what you could have done.
Right, because they had to learn it kinesthetically, right? Sometimes, again, when we want to overprotect, right? We don't let them bang into the walls, right? And when they do it, they're like, "Ooh, that hurt. I'm not going to do that again." You're like, "Oh, okay. Now we're good." And they go off on a much better path.
Yes, and often they open doors you didn't even know were there. I mean, I always say to people, my son is someone who I would have fainted if he'd sat at my third grade lunch table. I mean, he's such a rock star of a person, and as a human being. But part of, I mean, we do come in with genetics. And I am definitely, so much of it is nature, that we really need to use what we can with nurture. And if we haven't gotten appropriate nurture, the good news is we're adults and we can do something different. We won't understand it until it's done. And that's the big myth. Like, the big myth is you have to be okay alone before you fall in love again. That's BS. You'll feel okay when you fall in love again. And we are social animals, and we're meant to be connected. And one of my favorite stories was my grandmother, when I was in my 20s, called me, and she was so relieved. She was doing this wedding party for this girl. She was in her 80s, for this girl who had been living, in sin with this merchant marine. And I was kind of jealous. My mother was dead, and she was someone important in my life. I
Sure.
later learned that this girl was in her 70s.
Oh, love that.
It's something I've always remembered, because it's not, there's so many, and I'm sure your listeners, who are in their 50s and 60s or 70s or even 80s can relate. There's so many statistics that will tell you you can't. But A, you can, and
Yeah.
B, if you want it and you don't move forward with that in your frame of vision, then you don't really want it. Because the reality is you don't have to believe in something for it to happen. People always say, "Oh, I don't have faith in that." I'm like, so faith is not required. It's
Right.
actions required, moving forward's required. And if it's important enough to want, it's important enough to keep making space for.
It's so true. Action is everything. People will tell me, "Well, I've been through years of therapy. I know what a narcissist is now," right? Like I could spot one walking down the street. I said, "Listen, when you get into the arena, that's when you're going to know, do you have the power to discern that or not?" I'm like, knowledge isn't power. It's execution is power. It's doing the right thing at the right time. Do you see the thing? And then do you say no to the thing? Or do you say yes to the thing like you have a thousand times?
Or do you say, I mean, frankly, I mean, it ended badly, but I was with a very helpful narcissist, because I gave this person an identity. They were very helpful in my own life. There were places where the relationship was definitely devoid of something important for me, but at that point in my life, I don't think another relationship would have functioned. I wasn't at a state of maturity. I needed to make a living and raise a child. I mean, there were things I needed to do. So, I think we also label, and a person is not one thing. Like people will say, oh, this person's a character disorder. Well, every politician, is a psychopath. I mean, they're all on the psychopathy scale, but they use it in a way that can be really helpful. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to run a, I wouldn't want to be a governor, I mean, they're
Or a
very,
president, for example.
yes, there are very few people in with that kind of power. There are, they exist, but that aren't on that scale. But the idea is we are responsible for ourselves. What you no longer need will drop away when you have, when you've taken the responsibility and learned to do what you need to do. But none of us need to do, everything. And we do, we compensate. I had a friend who was an MD, PhD neuropsychiatrist and also a psychic. And she used her, one of her favorite phrases, and she used it for me and my husband too, is, well, together you have one complete brain. And
Done.
yeah, I mean, we all compensate for each other. And people who are looking for fourth ego center, again, people who are looking for love, it's different at the second ego center, just below the navel, your sexual, your passion, your sexuality. But people who are really looking for commitment, which of course also encompasses that passion and
Sure.
sexuality for most of us, they start with this hunger. Now, hunger is good, but then you want to find that fourth ego center everywhere in your life. Beauty, what are you looking at? That what do you value? Engage in it. My husband values food. I'm not a food person, but I, go to these big Michelin meals that take 4 hours. And I value watching this sensual man taste all of this food that could interest me in the least. And wonder at how he walks out of there with wine pairings, which I could never do. But you don't start with, I'm going to go find love. You start with, okay, I want a wonderful partner, and I want to be a wonderful partner because that everything's reflexive. And if it's not, you know the problem, the source of the problem. But now where I start is at birth. Where I start is, let me choose places I'm valued. Let me choose to engage in behaviors that I value. And then autonomy, let me choose to add value and seek situations out where I am value added. And let me notice and treasure my own dignity. And it's really, again, it starts with, and I actually, put a little marker on the fourth ego center. It starts with, if you think nobody wants your love, then you start with this assertion. My love is a valuable resource that I share as a precious gift. That may not be being in love in this second. That may be thanking the bus driver.
Yes.
Not enough people thank their bus drivers or their train conductors, It may be what I have belongs to no one but me. I choose whom to share it with. Women have trouble with that one. Try it for a day. If that doesn't resonate with you, if you're all about sharing, try that for a day. It will change your life. And the interesting thing is, when you wear a red dress, when you behave differently, even in a tiny way, who and what and the opportunities you encounter are different. So your life changes immediately. And it's not about belief, because if your life doesn't change immediately, then you're kidding yourself. You've picked something that resonates with you. If you look at it, you'll see it. Pick something else. Or better yet, have a really frank friend pick for you.
Absolutely. I say every woman needs to have a red dress moment, right? And look for what in your closet. And when you start to, I think, say, I know what's good for me, you will automatically be able to make those decisions.
See, I think when you say you know what's good for you, half the time it's your old patterns. I think it's very important. You know, one of the upsides of social media and YouTubes and all of these lectures and classes is that you can pick someone who's done what you wanted to do successfully. So one of, people are your teachers. You pick an outside catalyst. Your dress is probably not in your closet. And if it is, it's still in the bag and someone gave it to you. Because we are creatures of habit.
We're in
We
a program.
run that track. But the wonderful thing, and one of the reasons that people statistically tend to fall in love on vacation, is that when you organically break a part of that track you're on, you have a tiny little window where you haven't been able to reassemble it yet. So, for example, when I land in a new country, before I have my habits and my Pilates class and I travel with a suitcase that is basically a room, that's basically my patterns. But you can see I have my mug in the hotel room, my tea that I brought from New York. But I have a little window where I'm different because my external patterns, my routines aren't holding me in place. Try to go somewhere that's different. And again, find a friend's suggestion, a friend you'd never go on vacation with, and go somewhere different. Because what you'll find is you, it doesn't change you, but you encounter different things. That's what changes you.
You encounter the unknown, right? And that in and of itself, it's funny that you say this. We did a podcast episode about this a couple of months ago, and we called it Bring Vacation You to Your Dates. I spoke at an event, and there was a young woman who says, "Oh, Bella, I just need to move out of Chicago because there's no good men here. But every time I leave Chicago, I meet somebody on vacation." And so I looked at her curiously. I said, when you get on that jet bridge to get to the airplane, who do you become? You are becoming more open, more receptive, right? Because if your story is there's no good men left in Chicago, what are you going to believe? There's no one here. You're going to have your blinders on. But the minute you get on that plane, you're like, okay, bring it on. And your own, it's like you've taken off your blinders. And it's funny. And she says, okay. So another woman who was sitting in that audience thought, I think this is me, and I'm going to bring vacation me to all my dates. And so I had no idea. I was speaking at an event, and you know, somebody kind of waits to speak to you, taps you on the shoulder, and said, you don't know me, but something that you said a decade ago in speaking to this woman about vacation you. I need to tell you a story, and I am now married with two kids because I brought vacation me to my first date. I was like, oh my gosh, so what you're saying is 100% true.
That's a lovely story. And studies, robust studies show we find what we're looking for. We only see what we know. We don't see it doesn't register. You know, if you never had opened a door, if you didn't know what a door was, you wouldn't know how to open it. You wouldn't say, oh, this is a passageway from one environment to the next. And part of, again, I know social media gets such a bad rap, but one of the wonderful things about social media is that you can see how other people do it. You know, maybe not on Instagram posts, but on YouTubes, on, authors who've found systems, done things in a way that work for them, or watching someone, speak about, love and speak about even love and loss, and allowing yourself to experience the world from their point of view for a while often opens something up that then leads to a different behavior. Because again, it is so difficult, this message that we get that we have to be better or we have to change. No, you simply have to do something differently. And it's not something you can come up with on your own. You know, we are held together by our patterns. We're also limited by them.
100%. And when we help clients, to your point, it's to get out of those patterns. For example, we have something called the high GPQ framework that we teach people, high and good partner qualities. And in 16 years, you know, knock on wood, we've people with our clients that have followed our methods around the world, we haven't had any divorces. But one of the things that we do is really hold people's hand through the process to take them out of the old program. Maybe that's being with people that are red flaggy, don't treat them well, don't love them well. And we have something, what we help them to do is think about what we call their elevator people. People that elevate you and make you really happy. And so now we have them think about their elevator people. Who are the people in your life, they can be alive or have passed, that make you happy, that make you feel really loved? And we go through it person by person. I actually have one here on my desk that's a little jumbly. And we have them go through every person that's their elevator person. And then look for the theme in those characteristics, which is very different than I want him to be tall and make over $150,000. That's all fine and well and good. But how do you want to feel? You want to feel elevated. And helping people to break the patterns of looking for the quantitative and sticking with them to say, how do you feel in this? Is this person an elevator person for you? And we have all kinds of funny, quirky rules that help. It's like 15 dates until you get exclusive. Yeah, but it's getting out of what, it's getting out of your comfort zone and doing things differently.
But also realizing that everyone's imperfect and imperfect people love imperfectly. And I think that we have a very pediatric idea of both our perfection and our way of loving perfectly and how someone should love us. And the reality is people are works in progress and relationships are a third party. Relationship isn't about just you and the other person. Relationship is an entity unto itself. And so, you know, one of the things, fourth ego center, every ego center has an intuitive ability. And in the fourth ego center, that intuitive ability is telepathy. Your heart, not your brain, your heart sends out the strongest electrical charge from outside your body, emanating from your body to the world around you. Telepathy is person to person or even being to being, sentient being to sentient being communication. And learning to master your telepathy really helps you attract without having to, again, lose your dignity, work on attracting. At the same time, it also is very healing for you. Because when you have appropriate telepathy, and telepathy is as much hearing as sending, hearing metaphorically. You know, one of the places we get caught is often we are in a situation and we don't feel good about ourselves and we don't realize that's the telepathy we're getting from the other person. But we're not listening because sometimes that telepathy isn't, oh, you're not good enough. Sometimes that telepathy is, I'm uncomfortable. I need to get out of here because I'm not good enough. So when we train telepathy, we learn that most of the dialogues take place below consciousness and that it's really not always our list of what makes us feel good. You know, it's often what it is we're able to recognize in other people. A great telepathy exercise is to simply find something profoundly likable about every single person and situation you
that.
encounter. Because what it does is it opens up a door that may be closed in the other person, even people you haven't met. You know, when you go out into the world with a position of acceptance, which is really hard when you're alone. I mean, I still remember I dated for 2 years, and I still remember those 2 years and having to struggle with my own guardedness. Because it I knew that I was sending that out. And one of the things that helped me was that I had a son. So I remembered, and I have a son who I adore. The sun rises and sets, no pun intended, with my son. And I remembered that every man is some woman's son. And you know, how would I want my son to be approached? And it's really the
That's
what
so
you
beautiful.
send out, people respond to. Now, that doesn't mean that you are incautious. It doesn't mean you swallow everything whole, but it means that your starting point is of acceptance. And that when you're feeling something that it doesn't feel good to you, you also have acceptance of yourself. I mean, one of my favorite mantras is, I'm a work in progress. I'm a work in progress. I'm a work in progress.
I love that. So you can look for something profoundly lovely in a person, but that doesn't mean you have to love that person. It just changes the way you are and think.
Yes, and
Yeah.
in relationships, so in a relationship, you know, there are two times that telepathy really trips us up. In a relationship, when it's beginning, and when it's ending. I'm going to start with when it's ending. I hear so many times at the end of a relationship, especially from the person who didn't want it to end, oh, they're not reaching out, they're not responding to me in any way. I'm like, how much of your day are you having dialogues with them? 90% of it. Why would they reach out? They already have access to you without having to own any of it. What if every time they come into your consciousness, you shift your attention to something else? Now, it takes discipline, and you probably have to do it 1,000 times the first day, 999 times the second day. But chances are that person will reach out to you for a resolution, or sometimes to, you know, reignite, to work through the problems, because they don't have that sneaky access to you. And the other thing is, you inhabit yourself. You know, one of the things that they've shown in relationships is that your respiration, your brain waves, your heart rate, you function in part like one person. And so it really is a ripping away of self. And the mistake people make is you really do need to treat a breakup as a physical condition, an illness that needs to be treated
And healed,
on many different levels. Now, telepathy also in a relationship is important because, you know, often what we're saying is very loving and accepting. But the dialogue and what we're feeling is like, why won't they just do this? Why doesn't this person just propose? Why don't they just put the toilet seat down? Why don't, you know, and then we feel unaccepted because we've been so nice, but the other person's defensive. Of course they're defensive. They're hearing you. You have the opportunity to change that dialogue. Often we like to say, oh, this person's a narcissist, or this person's just like this, or this person is selfish, or this person. Naming someone takes away
labeling.
all your power to be able to manage a situation and engage in it authentically. Instead of saying, wow, it would mean so much to me if this person helped with this. Or, for example, my husband asks really stupid questions. He has literal male refrigerator blindness. He opens the door, looks straight at the milk, and says, where's the milk? And sometimes I want to club him like a baby seal. And at that point, I have standard things that I do because I know that's not good telepathy. A, what I should say is just express it. I want to club you like a baby seal when that milk's in front of you. And maybe do it with a little bit of humor so it's out, so it's not underneath fomenting. But the other thing that I do is I remember that I never have to take out the garbage. I never have to lift a heavy bag. He cares so much about my happiness, my satisfaction, that I like what I'm tasting, that I like what he's wearing. And I have my Bible of things that are so beautiful about him to appreciate. And, it's so important, both telepathically and in life, to know which are the battles to fight and which are the battles that really just don't matter. Because often those battles are really with, my mother who couldn't boil water. I mean, those battles are rarely with the person you're having them with.
Quick question. I love, can you explain when you're talking about telepathy and telepathically, just give us a quick definition of what that means in this context?
Telepathy are those conversations we have, even with people we've never met yet, that are sent by our experience. So, for example, unfortunately, children who have been abused attract abusive partners because the dialogue they've learned to have is a dialogue of someone who can be victimized. When they shift that, when they experience their own worth and power, when they learn boundaries, when they learn, oh, this is PTSD. And when I do that, I just take three breaths in through my nose quickly and one slow one through my mouth. Exhale, and then they're in this sense of stability. They attract people who are attracted to stability and they don't attract abusers. The reality is, if you are attracting narcissists, if you are not attracting at all, it's your experience of yourself or your behaviors. It's not because there's not someone there for you. There is.
Wow.
There are plenty of people who actually don't want to be in the kinds of relationships you're talking about. I know quite a few of them. I can't even believe they exist, but there are. I mean, I'm
There
someone
are.
who always is a toosie-toosie.
I love that. And
But yeah.
oh, sorry, I didn't
But
mean to interrupt you.
telepathy, we are always communicating with the world around us. And the healthy thing about telepathy is what that means is you need to find ways that you're okay. Sometimes that's getting enough sleep, sometimes it's some therapy. Sometimes it's some behaviors that you do differently. Sometimes it's medication. Sometimes it's exercise. All different things, healthy things that make you feel good. Because, of course, if you value yourself, you don't do unhealthy things. I mean, of course, we do unhealthy things, but we, you know, you, you're how you feel about yourself is broadcast to the world, and how you feel about others is broadcast to the world. So if men are other to you, or women are other to you, or whatever gender you want to connect with is other to you in a way that is derisive, that does not have respect and dignity, then you're likely to either attract someone who doesn't respect or dignify you, or attract nobody at all. Whereas, if you realize people are mixed bags, I mean, my husband and I have a wonderful relationship. That doesn't mean there aren't blood stains on the carpet
For sure.
from working through things. Relationships are the most elevating thing that you can have. And I'm not just talking about a love relationship, a relationship with your parent, your child, your neighbor, the bus driver, the person who, you want to scowl at, but you don't. You find a reason to say, you know what? I mean, it really it is really important how you experience you. And it starts again, fourth ego center, with value.
I love this so much. And you, speaking of your lovely husband, and I love the blood stains on the carpet. I've been married 28 years, and absolutely the blood stains are in each and every room of the house. But tell us, how did you meet your husband?
So I am after my prior relationships, all of which served me for the time that they did. But after my prior relationships, they had a lot in common with how I was raised, and my role was the same, kind of a caretaker. And I realized that the one place that I really stumbled on my intuition, stumbled on my habits, was that people like my parents felt like home to me. That's what felt comfortable to me. So I asked my two best girlfriends who had long-term marriages with good men who they were still in love with to set me up with men. And I had these criteria. They had to have known them for at least 20 years. They had to have been married and had children and had been good to their ex-wives and children. And they had to have nothing to do with Hollywood, just because so much of my business is entertainment. And I got everything except for nothing to do with Hollywood. And when I met my husband, and they had to, and they set some rules for me. And I wasn't going to date one on one. I had to go out to dinner with them as a couple and this other person. And they had some rules for me. And I listened, because again, you need an external catalyst. You need to do something differently. I had to have three dates if the person asked me out again. And if I could even force myself, one kiss. So I met my husband, and this is before I knew how to text. And I emailed my friend and I said, "Don't encourage him. He's not my type." And she said to me, "Honey, maybe that's a good thing."
Okay, for example, let's get out of the program.
But she also said, "Listen, you have to go to the same premieres. So he can be your plus one, you can be his." So I did the three-date rule. My guard was down because I already knew he wasn't my type, so it wasn't going to be a relationship. And the second date actually got delayed. And then when we had it, it was at in a moment, synchronistically, and I don't believe in coincidence. I think we live in a causal synchronous universe. Synchronistically, it was when something very difficult had just happened in my life. And he was so solid. And my guard was down, but also I'd just been run over by a truck. And so I really appreciated his presence. Still wasn't my type. I mean, he loved his
Clearly.
friends. He was employed. He had no deep-seated rage, no addiction problem. Like, he was just not my type.
Boring.
Boring. Third date, the man was a wolf. Hand on my leg, I take his hand off my leg. Hand on my leg, I take my hand. But a polite, a polite middle of the United States wolf. And I thought, okay, I'm gonna, and he really wanted to kiss me. It was clear. I thought, fine, I'm gonna do the kiss.
Yeah, you promised
I
one
promised.
kiss.
I did the kiss. That was it. We've been together ever since, 14 years.
Oh, I love that so
And
much.
he is literally, we wake up in the morning and we've both had some challenging relationship histories. And we look at each other almost every morning and we say, we are grateful for whatever got us here. And I have to tell, those of you who look at people who've had long marriages or who, had lots of great consecutive relationships, or it's interesting. Love when you're older, and I'm 66, is a little bit like a smorgasbord. When you're young, you go to a smorgasbord and you try everything and you eat too much and you feel sick. And it's an unpleasant experience in the long run, even though it's exciting. At a certain age, you know what you like, even if you don't know what it looks like, even if you've never tasted it, you kind of have some different sense. And it really allows you to connect. The other thing is, when you're older, the questions are different. I didn't need someone to support me.
Right.
Second, ego center, being able to nourish yourself. I could nourish myself. I was able to take out my own garbage. I knew how to operate in the world. This may be a little untoward, but believe it or not, I didn't discover a vibrator till I was 50, so I could take care of all my basic needs. And I really was able to pick somebody or to allow myself to be chosen by somebody just because I enjoyed being with them. And it was really an amazing, it still is, it's an amazing experience. And relationships, people change, relationships change. And changing with them is important, you know, because, and sometimes that change does feel like a betrayal. But, you know, there's something wonderful. What my husband wanted to get married, and I did not particularly want to get married. I had the longest divorce in history. But I valued him enough to say, okay, I want to give him what he wants. But I wanted to get married in my kitchen. I wanted to not buy a new dress. Like, I had all of these conditions, but I valued this person so much. And when I said I do, I burst into tears because I realized I had just done something so wonderful. But the difference between an older love and a younger love is also the level of commitment is different because as you get older, things happen. Your world actually changes much more quickly when you're older than when you're younger. You know, your friends move, your friends die, your friends have problems with their children. They also get wonderful new jobs, they start new careers. Like, everything shifts when you're older. You're not as structured in certain ways. And you really, in a sense, say to yourself, do I value this person? Not, is this the person I want to raise kids with? Or is this the person who can help me build a home or help me create a good financial bit, you know, or but is this the person I value enough that until the very end, just their presence, fourth ego center, just their being here has worth to me, whatever happens. And it is, I cannot tell you what an exquisite level of commitment that is.
It's amazing and so beautifully said.
That said, I wanted to give people some things to do.
I love that. Give us homework.
Yes, here's your
Give us
homework.
homework, Miss Day, Dr. Day.
Every place is an altar. Your bed's an altar, your chair's an altar, where you pick to sit on the train is an altar. Everything is an altar. Notice, don't assign. Notice what do your altars mean? And if they don't mean something that's bringing what you want into your life, change them. Everything you do is a ritual. Do you wash your face and say, oh my God, I look so old? Or do you wash your face and feel the beauty and smoothness of your skin and smell the beautiful scent of your soap? Really create your life. The rituals don't have to be out of your normal life, but create rituals of eating, of cleansing, of moving, of greeting, to be rituals that bring you what it is you want, not other people's rituals, your own.
Your
The
own.
other thing is that ritual has only the power you assign it. It has the power you give it. Community, though, unity has a power of its own, and that has been proven so many different times. There was a great transcendental meditation experiment that was replicated all over the world that people meditating on the word peace at a specific time lowered the violence in the areas around them, everything from fire to theft. When we join in community with the intention of creating, of being agents of change and care for one another, we create change. We are exponentially more powerful. So have friends you get together with to do a love ritual. And by the way, if you're alone, a love ritual can feel awful. That's okay. Your love ritual can have tears. Your love ritual can have a little doll you stick pins in. Your love ritual can have lots of things. Don't be afraid of any of the emotions. One of the things we're on Instagram every day, we work together as a group. And one of the things we were doing at the second ego center, just below your navel, which is nourishment, creativity, and abundance. And what is love but abundance?
Abundance.
One of the things that we do are shame and blame pages. And there's actually robust research on the positive effects, not just inside of yourself, but in your external world, of writing down who you blame, what you're ashamed of, and then ripping it up or burning it and getting rid of it. If you don't get rid of it, it does not have the same effect. These are not my studies, and they're not esoteric studies. They're
They're
very
real.
robust studies done. You know, a lot of times there people say research shows, and then you see the research is five people. No, these are really wonderful and robust studies. So get together in groups. That's what celebrations used to be. Get together and be a barn raiser. You know, one of the things I did when I was dating is if someone wasn't for me or if I wasn't for them, I had all kinds of single girlfriends who I would say, you know, you should meet this person. And I actually have a marriage or two to my credit as well, you know. I really engage in your life. We tend to think about our lives a lot, but not engage in them. And that's really what the prism is about. Different ways to engage in life that give you immediate different results.
I love that. And you're big on goal setting, which I love.
Well, goals give energy context. It's like gasoline without a car is just a spill on the ground. A flammable, smelly one at that. Goals give your energy and your efforts context, and it also interprets for you and helps you direct what comes at you from the world. So it's really important to have goals, and they can be specific, they don't have to be specific, but what they do have to be are things where you know when they've happened. So when someone says, my goal is to be happy, I'm like, you could get a head injury and be happy. You know, is that your goal? And they're like, no. Okay, so you're happy. What is that in your life? I am in a wonderful home with a great job, with a great community, and I'm in a way that I'm not worried about the future. And the next day, you get a job offer. That's proof.
That's
Stick with evidence-based practices. If you have to
true.
believe in something for it to work, your belief works, the practice doesn't.
Say that again. I love
If
that.
you have to believe in something for it to work, the belief works, but the tool, the practice, doesn't. So one of the things I ask you to do in the prism is
Beautiful.
create three goals. Go to those ego centers in the book, make one tiny change, and what you manifest, and I tend to hate that word because it just means make something happen, but what you encounter in the world should be different. And that is proof. And it's important to live in an evidence-based world because fantasy tools give you fantasy results. And we are living a very real life in a very real world. And the good news is you have the power to change that, doing simple things. You know, it is a change is a big industry. Everything's a big industry. And when something is an industry, people like to complicate it. Because you are a very intricate, complicated system, living in a complicated, intricate system of the world, a tiny change has a monumental impact.
on you and others.
Well, you are others. I mean, that is one of the things you realize when you do the prism, that really you are part of an ecosystem. When you change, everything changes around you.
This is amazing. We're so lucky to have your work and for you to be our angel.
And you know, I love on Instagram at Laura Day Intuit, we do this together. We do it ego center by ego center. We rebuild our lives. We exchange readings. We exchange healings. And we really do work as a community. It is a ritual that we practice. I mean, the timing is always different because I'm changing time zones every 2 weeks. But it's a wonderful, wonderful group of people, which actually started during COVID because people were freaking out, and these tools were so helpful. Some people said, "Oh my God, I can't do all the things I used to do." And one of the things we did is, yeah, we can't do all the things we used to do. It clears a field for new things. What's the can do right now? Let's do it.
Amazing. Well, you are profoundly changing the world, and all of you, make sure I'm going to put the book in the show links. And for those of you watching, this is amazing. The Prism, 7 Steps to Heal Your Past and Transform Your Future. We're incredibly lucky that Laura dug deep and figured out her system and is sharing it with us. And why wouldn't we? So thank you so much for sharing this and sharing your work with us.
Thank you so much. And please put the Instagram link because that's where you can really see your own intuition working for others. So it's a little easier to identify it than in your own life.
And that was Laura Day Intuit.
Yes.
We will have it all in the show notes. So thank you so much, Laura, for being on the podcast today. I would love to have you back again and
Love to.
continue the conversation because I feel like this could have gone on for 3 more hours. This is amazing. And thank you. And smart daters, I hope that you feel something change. You feel something beautiful inside of you, something blooming. I hope you feel this. I hope you feel a sense of hope. I hope you feel a sense of, wow, I'm going to look for something amazing and profoundly likable in a person today. And I'm going to look in the mirror and find something profoundly likable in me. And I hope that these little things, remember, change happens in an instant, like Laura said. So I wish you an amazing day full of love. Be the love. And until our next episode, I bid you farewell.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.